CliffCentral.com.
Dr. Portia Gumede is here. Her love for medicine came about when she watched her mother as a nurse looking after her ailing grandmother. Watching her grandmother made her feel helpless, and she vowed to help other people. She, of course, went to medical school, developed a passion for skincare, which is what inspired her to one day open up an aesthetics center for the African and global market, and that's exactly what she's done. It's a very famous place already. So how long has it been in operation?
We've launched our practice in March this year, but it's been in operation for longer than that because of the work that I've been doing behind the scenes and the work that I've been doing from home for about 2.5 years prior. But then it came to time to actually launch the practice, and that was in March this year.
It apparently is the most beautiful place in Johannesburg. I mean, people are telling me that it just looks like a palace. You walk in and you feel immediately like you've stepped into another world.
Thank you. I do love beautiful places, and I also love my clients when they come in to also feel like I care. I care about the environment that they step into. They must feel as if they're going to come out looking beautiful or also feeling confident. You may not walk out looking beautiful immediately, but at least walk out feeling confident in your skin.
So it's called the Aesthetic Lifestyle Center. It's in Hyde Park, and it opened up in March, as you've already said. And how are people taking to it? Are you seeing a huge amount of interest? I mean, there was a lot of press when you guys opened up. I think you've had many rich and famous people come through the doors and attend. But is it taking off?
It's taking off quite nicely, and what's nice about us is that we really for everyone. It's not only the rich and famous that walk in through our doors, it's everybody who comes in through our doors. And it's been interesting to get new clients, people who've never been exposed to aesthetics or just looking after their skin, and how they get educated from something as simple as putting on sunscreen. It's been quite amazing and educational for them as well as for us.
So Dr. Portia, tell me how it all started for you, because you've got quite an interesting life. You've had an amazing experience in this life, and it's not the kind of story that everybody can share. I mean, it seems to me that a lot of people who end up in medicine are the kind of people who have that dream of being a doctor or a nurse, and sometimes they come from privileged backgrounds, and sometimes they have a lot of resources available to them. That wasn't the case for you.
Absolutely not, Gareth. You know, I was born in Claremont, which is in KwaZulu-Natal. It's a semi-rural place. I grew up on dust roads. And this was back in the 80s, where I used to go to school there. And we had a lot of riots were taking place. Nelson Mandela was still in jail. My generation actually did not even know Nelson Mandela. We didn't know how he looked like.
Nobody knew what he...
Absolutely.
We had no idea. When we saw him come out of jail, I remember most people were more interested in what he looked like
exactly.
than anything else.
Yes, we didn't know how he looked like. But for me as a young girl, growing up at that time, with the riots and the police and people chasing us from school and tear gas, etc., all I knew was really Winnie Mandela was the first person that I saw as fighting for African people, which was quite different because she was a black woman. And my parents from that stage decided, let's try and get our daughter maybe into another school because we've got too much going on in the township. We didn't have money at all. We stayed in a two-room house. The one room where I slept in also doubled as a kitchen, as a dining room, as a lounge, and also as a bedroom for me and my siblings. So my parents applied for bursaries, and I received a bursary from the Mercury newspaper. And I was accepted at a prestigious school, Durban Girls College, in Durban. And that is the school that I started going to. And it was very interesting because the first day my mother took me to school, to get even my uniform, which I could only get from a secondhand shop.
Sure.
We caught a bus, we got to town, and from town we had to catch a separate bus. So even if I was wearing the same uniform as my friends at school, I would have to wait for the green bus,
yeah.
And my friends would have to wait for the blue bus, yet we were going to the same environment. And the whole place was just very different from where I was coming from. You know,
it's been kind of scary for you.
It was extremely scary. Each time I reached town, I used to get palpitations. My heart would beat so fast. Firstly, it was a culture shock. It was a different language. I couldn't speak English at the time. And it was just this beautiful place with tarred roads, traffic lights. Big houses.
You'd never seen any of that.
Absolutely.
You were used to the townships.
Not. I was used to my dust road where sometimes there's cows on the road while you are on the way to school. If it's raining, the road is muddy. You get to the bus stop with your shoes covered in mud. But now this was just a completely different different place. And, you know, apartheid was still very rife at the time. And the conversations that were spoken in the township, for example, about white people were very different than what was spoken now. But I was privileged to get to see the other world, the other side, and be in a school where I felt like I was one of them. Mm. And actually, when I entered through the school gates, that is where, for me, apartheid ended. It ended outside of the gates. Inside the school, I was one with everybody else.
What an incredible situation for a young lady to end up in, because if you hadn't had that opportunity, if your parents weren't so keen on giving you another chance at a different sort of life, if they'd kept you in a place of what you were used to.
Yes.
And what you were probably quite comfortable with, because it was what you knew.
Absolutely.
You might not have become the person that you are now.
Absolutely. I think them being progressive and taking me out of that and getting me to be in that situation really taught me a lot. It really taught me a lot, even about race relationships, even understanding that not everybody is the same. So you might experience that one person is one way, but it doesn't mean that everybody is covered in one blanket.
It's interesting to me that you've always been quite ambitious. You've always wanted to do more and to see more and to be more. And clearly medicine is quite a complicated thing to get into. It's hard enough to achieve the results that you need to get into that. It's another thing to be able to afford it. And it's another thing entirely to end up in your own practice one day. Were all of these dreams in your head already when you were at school, or were they things that developed over time?
I think these kind of dreams really started for me as a young girl in Clermont, because I realized that every opportunity that you get given, you must use it to the most. So even when, for example, I went to the school that I went to, even in my secondhand uniform and my shoes with holes, I decided I must be the best version of myself in this situation. And that is what has always driven me, just be the best version of myself, of whatever it is that I can be. And I guess also the drive from my parents that the only way to get out of a difficult time is really by education. And so they pushed for us education. Yes, we were in a time where there were riots, it was a struggle, etc. But they said, you know, yes, we need to win things, some of them by violence, but let's push through education as well, because it's also one of the ways that can free you.
Absolutely. And you certainly freed yourself. And I think you're freeing a lot of other people every day, because what you're doing now is, I suppose, you're helping empower people. You know, a lot of us we don't look the way we want to look. A lot of us, and that's a very superficial thing, but it has an impact on the deeper person, right, and the personality. The skin is the largest organ. We don't necessarily take care of it as well as we should. Many of us do everyday things that are massively damaging to our skins. And you must have had, at some point in this story of yours, an extraordinary interest in that in particular, and aesthetics too, which is not something you would think, you know, is the first choice on anyone's menu of what they could specialize in. What made you tend towards aesthetics and skin and the stuff that you're involved with now?
Well, as you mentioned, that skin is the largest organ in our bodies, and I fell in love with skin while I was in medical school.
Didn't you also win a Miss Durban or... Yeah, you won a Miss Durban pageant. I mean, this is important because I know you see the contrast between a doctor and then a beauty pageant winner, but the two are both achievements.
Thank you, but that was just back in the day, having fun.
But it's an achievement. I mean, hell, there's probably a lot of girls who only ever did something like that and they didn't even win it.
So what I realized for a lot of young girls is that it's really about confidence. Mm. So doing something like modeling, which is really grooming, I find is very important for women and men. It makes you more confident. So if you're walking around and maybe you've got marks after having acne, etc., it does
sun damage or whatever it is.
It does make other people's confidence go down a little bit. But if you improve the skin, it does increase the self-confidence. And that's what it really is about, is self-confidence.
Do you think that some people are just lucky, they're just born with really good skins and they never have a problem in their lives and they just manage to, you know, breeze through it? They don't have to use tons and tons of products or go for procedures. They just somehow genetically are gifted with their skin.
Absolutely. There are some people, very small amount, but there are some people who have beautiful skin and they can put anything on their skin and they're fine. But most of us have to put something on our skin. We have to make an effort. It, as we said, it's the largest organ in our body. We need to look after it. And you'll find that in medicine, there's been so many advances that have been done for the heart, for the lungs, for treatment of this. And people are exercising to make sure that they look good and they feel good. And this is just one of the ways to make the skin catch up with that. So you look as good as you feel.
What are your advice to people who really haven't thought about much of this before? And maybe there are people who are just doing stupid things at the moment. They're in bad habits. What are the things that you think you absolutely at a basic level need to do to try and keep your skin in good nick?
Well, first of all, you need to have a very good cleanser and the right cleanser for your skin. People have different skin types. Others have sensitive skin. Others have oily skin. Mm-hmm. Use a cleanser that is good for your skin and a good moisturizer. And always, always have sunscreen on. Even on a cloudy day, put on sunscreen, because it's not just the rays of the sun that can affect you, but it's also the lights in the room. It's the computer lights that are from your computer screen, etc. And some of the sunscreens that we have now also have antioxidants, which are just fantastic for your skin. So sunscreen, sunscreen, sunscreen. It's also nice to keep your skin anti-aging. It's anti-aging.
Okay. Now, who doesn't want that?
Who doesn't?
Right. Okay, so those are the basics. But then obviously there are complicated and very particular conditions and situations that occur. Does your center deal with all of these? I mean, can someone come in and have an assessment done?
Yes, absolutely. That is the first thing we do on everybody that comes in. We have an assessment of the condition that they have, because not everybody has the same thing and not everybody is concerned about the same thing. You might look at somebody and see a problem, but for them it's not a concern. It's actually something else that's concerning them. So when they come in, we speak to them, we take a history, we find out from them what is it that affects them and where do they see a problem in their face. And then we have a beautiful machine where we actually assess and take cameras of the skin and take photos using a camera of the skin that can show how much fine wrinkles maybe there are or how much pigmentation there is, acne, etc.
And can you make us young again?
I can try. We can work on making you younger.
let's talk about black women's skin in particular, because we have a lot of there are a lot of stereotypes, there are a lot of very bad traditions, some bad habits that we're all into, but really there aren't a lot of places that have specialized and decided to specialize in black women's skin. And we know also that there are many women in the black community who are either trying to lighten their skin and do things that aren't necessarily good for the skin, especially if you're not doing it with a professional. Is this finally a place that we can come to, particularly for black women in South Africa who want advice on their particular kind, color, tone of skin?
Absolutely. So we did extensive research and work on darker skin because that's actually the more sensitive skin. With the darker skin, if you get an injury or an inflammation or a pimple or whatever it is, we'll get swelling, redness, pain on that area. And
so darker skin's more sensitive.
It is more sensitive. And what happens is because we have melanin goes to that area to actually help to heal. But once it's healed, then you are left with pigmentation. So the treatments that we do ensure that a client does not get pigmentation thereafter. We cannot do aggressive treatments on our skin because that will just leave you with pigmentation afterwards. Whatever we do has to be very gradual. You might have to come two or three more times than other people, but at least you'll get the same results in a safer environment because we do controlled inflammation treatments in the practice. Clients who do excessive treatments that are using skin lightening products,
chemicals, yeah,
absolutely, using chemicals on their faces. What happens is that is exactly the same as creating an inflammation on your face. So it will get lighter, it will get red. Sometimes you'll see they'll walk around with a little bit of pink cheeks. It's because the skin is inflamed, and once that heals, because melanin will go there, you'll be left with pigmentation in that area. Then it becomes a vicious cycle. Then they want to get more and more and more to try and remove that pigmentation. But those are not the correct ways of removing pigmentation on our skin.
And what about things like non-surgical facelifts?
Right. So non-surgical facelifts have become very popular because clients don't really want to go under the knife. Not everybody does. Some people have to, because we also get to a point where the non-surgical facelift is no longer indicated.
But we've all seen bad surgery too. Huh?
Yes, yes. And when you've gone for surgery and it's cut out, you can't reverse it. But there are non-surgical facelift procedures that we do, and they've become very popular.
And skin rejuvenation generally, I mean, are there new things being discovered all the time? Are there new treatments available, chemicals, there are new products that can be used that can make your skin younger?
Yes, absolutely. So skin rejuvenation is really one of the basic things that you can do in an aesthetic practice, which is a fantastic treatment of just removing the dead skin that is on top. And it's got different indications. Some are indicated for clients who have acne, some for clients who are aging, who have got fine lines, and some for clients who maybe have rosacea with a little bit of redness, some for pigmentation. And there's always something new coming out, safer products. And what's nice now, there's even more products that are indicated for the African client, and safer also for the African client's skin.
Now, I remember not so long ago when you just decided that you wanted to start your family, you did kind of stop practicing for a little while.
Yes.
What now that the kids are getting older and that you're able to kind of get away and run your own practice occasionally, I mean, is it something that you put on hold with the intention of starting again? Is it something that you wanted to take a break from? You weren't bored, were you?
No, I was not bored. when we started to...
But after you got married, right?
Yes, after I got married, my husband and I decided I would stop. And
a lot of people thought, oh, she's going to become one of those wives who just, you know, goes shopping. And
I couldn't do it. It was very, very difficult. You know, so I stopped. We got children. It was It was lovely. It was a lot of work.
With three kids, right?
Yes. Mm. I did not sit. I don't remember sitting down at all. I was either breastfeeding or I was pregnant or something. It was a lot of work. But once I started going to school and I found I had more free time, I think that's girl inside of me that always wants to be the best version of myself, no matter what it is, couldn't just sit and go shopping,
well,
as you say.
Even though you were, it's a full-time job to be a mom and to be a wife and to raise kids and
yes.
everything else. Even though you were doing all of that and you say you weren't sitting down, you also were heading up the foundation.
Yes.
You've got a Gumede Family Foundation.
Yes, yes, the Robert Gumede Family Kenny Foundation.
That's right. And you guys look after, in particular, vulnerable communities that lack resources. So that is still an important part of your life?
Absolutely. That is still a very big part of my life. You know, we have kids from Mpumalanga province that we have been looking after at university. As you know, Mpumalanga did not have a university. Now they do. Most of the children at the time went to Wits, Pretoria, Natal, Grahamstown, and even in PE.
Mm.
And we still have students because now they are finishing off on the program. But we've been looking after them in terms of tuition fees, accommodation, books, even a stipend. You know, they sometimes need just money to eat or buy whatever it is at school. So we'd look after them throughout until they finish and they graduate.
That's incredible. It's not like you've stopped learning either. I mean, didn't you go to King's College Medical School in London just to brush up on some skills and find out what's new?
Yes, I did and enjoyed that very much. It was with an oculoplastic surgeon and we dissected cadavers in London, which was quite interesting. Unusual because I'm so used to having African cadavers where I was, and suddenly it was all
white people.
White, I thought, who's killing white people here? There's something wrong.
So that's interesting. That's obviously the skin around the eyes, right?
Yes, it's for,
which is what most people really, if they go for plastic surgery of a kind, that's usually the first place they look.
Absolutely, around the eyes is where the skin is actually thinnest. Huh. So if you don't look after the skin around the eyes, that's where you first get fine lines, you get dark circles, etc. And that is one of the biggest concerns, one of the first concerns people have.
So when people come to the practice, do they say, I'm not talking to anyone else, I want to speak to Dr. P? Or do they speak to any range of the people, the very qualified people you've got there?
You've got different clients. There are those who are happy to speak to anybody. And there are those who know exactly what it is that they want. And they'll ask, I want to speak to Dr. P directly.
And are you always there?
I'm there every day.
Sure.
From 9 to 5.
Working,
every day.
Working hard.
Yes.
I have such admiration for that. And I don't mean this in some patronizing, half, you know, facile way. You don't have to work.
No, I don't.
I mean, you've already earned a reputation. You're married to an extremely successful man. You've got kids. There are lots of reasons why you could decide you don't want to do this anymore. You're there 9 to 5 every day.
Every day I'm there 9 to 5.
I mean, you see, this is what success looks like. And there's so many young women in the world who I think would be very motivated and inspired by your story because you've worked really hard. Every step of the way, you've earned everything you've done yourself. You've been an exemplar in South Africa. You have lots of very important connections, but you don't just waft around from social event to social event. You actually do stuff for people who pay you, first of all, and then for those people who you help in the communities that you help as well. You're effectively giving them all the assistance they need.
Yes.
I think that's great.
Absolutely. I love being hands-on. Mm. I love getting up and being part of a team and giving back and seeing the client satisfaction on their face. And
seeing
also
the face when it looks better. I mean, nothing better than walking out of there feeling good about yourself.
And also I have daughters.
Yeah.
You know, my husband and I, we have three daughters together. And I just knowing my background and where I'm coming from, I wanted to instill also in our daughters that you must wake up and work hard, because you don't know. I don't know where they're going to be. I don't know where they're going to end up. Money comes and goes.
Yeah.
But as a young woman, you must be able to stand on your own and not rely on a man.
Mm-hmm.
Love the man, let him love you also, but be able to be known for yourself.
Yeah, I think that there's so many young ladies in South Africa who could do with a feeling of self-worth.
Absolutely. You
know? For various reasons, they might not have that growing up. And it is a special thing when you see it in someone. I mean, I see it in you in bucket loads, but it's so great that you're able to give it to other people.
Thank you.
And help everybody, from someone who comes to you for an eye lift or whatever, to someone who is benefiting from the foundation and your work in the Eastern Cape, for example.
Absolutely.
I mean, these are ways we will individually be able to instill confidence and ambition.
Yes.
And drive in so many women.
Exactly. And just absolutely, that drive is so important, to get them to have a drive, wake up and have hope, because hope is really all you have when you have nothing.
Well, Dr. P, it's great to meet you. It's lovely to spend some time with you. I'm sure we'll talk to you again soon, but all the best with the practice. I think it's going to be a tremendous success if it isn't already. And congrats on everything that you've done. You really are an exemplary person.
Thank you so much, Gareth.
What a pleasure.
Thank you. CliffCentral.com.